Hello and welcome to Wizard Studies.
Join us as we peruse all things Potter.
Hello and welcome to Wizard Studies. I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
And today we're going to be talking about Mrs. Moni Myrtle. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind everybody about the giveaway that we're doing on our Instagram. We have not yet reached 100 followers on the day of recording. So if we could get a few more, that would be great. So if you listen and don't follow, or if you know people, friends that would like to follow and get some amazing Harry Potter content every once in a while, that would be great. Because once we reach 100 followers, we're going to be posting a picture. And if you like it, you'll be entered to win the giveaway. And I'll be giving out some goodies that I picked up at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter the last time I was there. So just wanted to remind everybody about that because we are not yet at 100 followers. But today's episode is going to be about Miss Moni Myrtle.
Yes, and Moni Myrtle's real name is Myrtle Elizabeth Warren. So there's quite a bit on the origin of this name. First off, myrtle is an evergreen shrub that is often overlooked for its plainness. And as we know, myrtle's kind of like a plain girl. And then the myrtle tree is similar to a willow tree. So, I mean, everyone's kind of heard of the weeping willow, and then that's a similar idea to moaning myrtle with the alliteration and the crying imagery. And it's also possible that JK chose myrtle being like a tree or a plant to keep in the tradition of naming characters after the flowers and plants. So you have lily and rose and petunia. And then a moaning mini, which is kind of similar to moaning myrtle, is the British name for German World War II artillery shell that made a distinctive moaning whine before it hit. So kind of calling up that imagery. And then I just thought it was funny that her middle and last names are Elizabeth Warren, because if you live in the U.S., you might know Elizabeth Warren is a presidential candidate for the 2020 election and also a senator from Massachusetts. So just kind of funny that it happened that Myrtle's middle and last names are Elizabeth Warren. JK has had to like come out and say, no, I wasn't hinting at Elizabeth Warren. And then also JK almost named her Wailing Wanda, which I kind of like. I think that'd be funny. And it's possible that she was given the middle name Elizabeth and the last name Warren as a reference to two characters from The Crucible by Arthur Miller. Elizabeth is, so the Crucible is about the Salem witch trials, if you don't know what it is, and Elizabeth Proctor and her young servant Mary Warren are two of the women that are accused of being witches during The Crucible. So that's kind of funny because Moaning Myrtle actually is a witch and her middle and last names are Elizabeth and Warren.
Yeah, The Crucible is actually one of my favorite things I read in English class in high school. I thought it was very interesting and entertaining. Moni Myrtle, or Myrtle, was in the house of Ravenclaw when she attended Hogwarts, which is something we don't always think about in terms of her because she's a ghost and not actually a student, but she was in Ravenclaw when she attended Hogwarts.
Yep, and then her hobbies are haunting the girls' bathroom.
Pretty straightforward. And then she was killed by a basilisk when the Chamber of Secrets was opened for the first time. And this was when Tom Riddle first opened it when he was at school, I believe in the 40s?
Yeah, because it was 50 years from 92.
Yeah.
Or 92, 93, so 42, 43?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Myrtle was born between either 1928 or 1929. We don't know what her birthday is, but it's been kind of worked out that she was born in the late 20s because she would have had to have been in school at the time that the Chamber of Secrets was opened the first time. And I think it's like said that she was 14 or 15 when she died.
Yeah. So moving on to the first mention. So for Myrtle, we're going to read two separate passages because the first time she was mentioned, she doesn't actually speak. And then just a few paragraphs later is when we meet her for the first time. And both of these scenes occur at Nearly Headless Nick's death day party in Chamber of Secrets. So Halloween night 1992. So, I'll just read the two passages. "Oh, no," said Hermione, stopping abruptly. "Turn back, turn back. I don't want to talk to Moaning Myrtle." "Who?" said Harry as they backtracked quickly. "She haunts the girls' toilet on the first floor," said Hermione. "She haunts a toilet?" "Yes, it's been out of order all year because she keeps having tantrums and flooding the place. I never went in there anyway if I could avoid it. It's awful trying to go to the loo with her wailing at you." "Look, food," said Ron. And then, like I said, a few paragraphs later, we actually meet Moaning Myrtle, so... "Heard you were talking about poor Myrtle," said Peeves, his eyes dancing. "Rude you was about poor Myrtle." He took a deep breath and bellowed, "Oi, Myrtle!" "Oh no, Peeves, don't tell her what I said. She'll be really upset," Hermione whispered frantically. "I didn't mean it. I don't mind her. Hello, Myrtle." The squat ghost of a girl glided over. She had the glummest face Harry had ever seen, half hidden behind lank hair and thick, pearly spectacles. "What?" she said sulkily. "How are you, Myrtle?" said Hermione in a falsely bright voice. "It's nice to see you out of the toilet." Myrtle sniffed. "Miss Granger was just talking about you," said Peeves slyly in Myrtle's ear. "Just saying how nice you look tonight," said Hermione, glaring at Peeves. Myrtle eyed Hermione suspiciously. "You're making fun of me," she said, silver tears welling rapidly in her small, see-through eyes. "No, honestly, didn't I just say how nice Myrtle's looking?" said Hermione, nudging Harry and Ron painfully in the ribs. "Oh yeah, she did." "Don't lie to me," Myrtle gasped, tears now flooding down her face while Peeves chuckled happily over her shoulder. "Do you think I don't know what people call me behind my back? Fat Myrtle, ugly Myrtle, miserable, moaning, moping Myrtle." "You've missed out, Spotty," Peeves hissed in her ear. Moaning Myrtle burst into anguished sobs and fled from the dungeon. Peeves shot after her, pelting her with moldy peanuts, yelling, "Spotty, Spotty!" "Oh dear," Hermione said sadly. I did pretty good that time.
Good Moaning Myrtle impression.
Thank you. But I don't think I messed up once. I think that's a first. But important to note that Spotty, which Peeves used to describe or taunt at Moaning Myrtle, is British slang for like pimples or zits. So they changed that in the US version to pimply. Because we don't use Spotty in our vernacular. So... I think I could be wrong, but I think the first two books were some of the only two that things were changed from the British version to the English version. Because I think if you read the first book in the English versions, everywhere it says mom, and then post the first or second book, it says mom.
Yeah.
So I think, like, after the book started kind of being successful and J.K. had the power to be like, no, don't edit it for other versions. I mean, for English and British, it was a little bit different. Obviously, for different languages, things have to be changed just because right. It's a lot harder to translate those. But I could be wrong on that. So if I am, please correct us.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, I guess the first one is the only one that has a different title in British first, the American versions.
Yeah, I never really understood that.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but... Alright, so moving on to Myrtle's Myers-Briggs personality type. By the MBTI database, which just is, like, again, fans posting what they think different characters are, she was assigned ISFP, which is the adventurer personality type. And I think a lot of this... I was having trouble deciding if it fits Myrtle or not because I feel like we know so little about her personality. Like, we know her as a ghost, but I would assume that her personality is now different based on what happened to her than it was when she was alive. And also, we only know her as her, like, 14-year-old state. So, I mean, pretty much anyone is not the most pleasant to be around at that age. So, like I said, Myrtle is ISFP. And these personalities are said to be true artists, but not in the typical sense, where they're out painting happy little trees. Often enough, they are perfectly capable of this. Rather, it's that they use aesthetics, design, and even their choices and actions to push the limits of social convention. And this really reminded me of the creative side of Ravenclaw, so kind of like a Luna character. And I think we don't see Myrtle acting as an artist, but I think it's totally feasible that she could be kind of the outside of the box Ravenclaw that Luna is, because we know that she did get bullied, and partially she got bullied for her appearance, but I think probably being kind of like an outside of the box thinker in person would not have helped with her social life at Hogwarts. Adventurers enjoy upsetting traditional expectations with experiments in beauty and behavior. Chances are they've expressed more than once the phrase, "Don't box me in." So this is along the same lines. We know that Myrtle got bullied for her glasses, for being spotty, like Peeve said, which, like, what 14-year-old doesn't have pimples? But I can see Myrtle also getting bullied for kind of going against the grain and not being the same as all the other girls in her year. Also, ISFPs are known to lose their tempers in, quote, a spectacular fashion. And that's spot on with Myrtle. I mean, that's why she's called Moaning Myrtle. That's why Hermione's avoiding the bathroom, because she can very quickly lose her temper and throw things at you and whatnot.
You mentioning that just reminded me, going back to the part of the section that I read in the first mention, Hermione's like, imagine trying to go to the loo with her wailing at you. Can you imagine that? That sounds literally awful.
Sounds terrible. I'd rather, like, not go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's, I mean, no wonder why nobody goes in that bathroom.
So adventurers are also known to be sensitive to others' feelings and value harmony, which kind of reminded me of Myrtle's relationship with Draco, which I think we're going to get into later, but definitely she was very, like, sensitive with his feelings, and when he was going through a time of trouble, she was supportive of him. When faced with criticism, it can be a challenge for people with this personality type to step away from the moment long enough to not get caught up in the heat of the moment. So basically, anytime anyone says anything about Myrtle, she thinks they're making fun of her and freaks out. That's pretty spot on. But living in the moment goes both ways, and once the heightened emotions of an argument cool, adventurers can usually call the past and move on as though it never occurred. I don't think Myrtle can do this. I think she holds grudges and she's pretty resentful. I mean, the whole reason she comes back as a ghost is because she wants to haunt the girl that bullied her. So, I mean, that might have something to do with her being a teenager. Even though she's become a ghost and lived another 50 years as a ghost, I don't think she, like, develops more maturely. I think she kind of stays the same personality and resentful teenagerness that she was when she was 14. So then just some strengths of this personality type are that they're supposed to be charming, sensitive to others, imaginative, passionate, curious, and artistic. I think a lot of those, kind of the last four I read, are really getting back at Ravenclaw traits, especially like the kind of the Luna type of Ravenclaw that's like creative and passionate and a little outside the box. Again, the sensitive to others is kind of like Myrtle with Draco. And then as far as curious, I mean, I guess that's a Ravenclaw trait, but I think Myrtle's more nosy and gossipy than curious. And then for weaknesses, there's fiercely independent, unpredictable, easily stressed, overly competitive, and fluctuating self-esteem. And easily stressed and fluctuating self-esteem are the two that really jumped out at me for Myrtle.
I think unpredictable could work as well. She's kind of like all over the place.
Definitely.
Yeah, so moving on to her life while at school, we don't know a whole lot about this. We know that she was a muggle-born, and we know that this probably contributed to some of the bullying that she received throughout her time at school. And she either started in 1940 or 1941, which we kind of talked about earlier. And this was how we got there from, like, kind of subtracting and going backwards from how old she was when she died and what year that was. And then going back to when she started, and then obviously subtracting back to when she was born. That's how we get those dates. And then she had a really hard time at school making friends and was bullied because of her looks. She had acne and glasses, which, I don't know, I don't think makes her so different than a lot of other students, but
yeah, I mean, if you think about high school / middle school, though, even, like, the smallest thing can be rough for kids. That's are cool true. To each other.
That is true. And then I think that thinking about her life at school is particularly heartbreaking just because we only see her as this very, like, one-dimensional, very annoying ghost. And we don't really think of her as a student who died when she was 14 and was basically bullied her entire time at school. That's really kind of heartbreaking, and I think it helps humanize her. Again, we don't know too much about her life at school, but what we do know is that it could not have been an easy one.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to her death, which is kind of the bulk of what we know about Myrtle as a person, especially her life at school. So we know at some point while she was a student, the Chamber of Secrets was opened by Tom Riddle for the first time. And during this time, everybody at the school originally thought that it was Hagrid who was responsible for opening the Chamber of Secrets, because that's who Tom Riddle kind of placed the blame on and made Hagrid take the fall. But we know now that it was actually Tom Riddle who's opening the Chamber of Secrets. And she died on June 13th, 1943. The events that led to her death is she was teased by Olive Hornby, which, side note, for some reason, every time I read this, I thought Olive Hornby was a boy. I don't really know why.
You're thinking Oliver?
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, and after she was teased so harshly that she ran to the bathroom to try and get away from Olive Hornby, and she ran into the stalls to cry. And then, so, it's kind of interesting, the bathroom, Moni Myrtle's bathroom is not consistent throughout the entire series. Sometimes it's described being on the first floor, and sometimes it's described being on the second floor, whether it's in Chamber of Secrets or beyond that, because we hear Harry kind of talk about it as the years go on, and it's not consistent as to where this bathroom is. So I don't know if she kind of moves from bathroom to bathroom, but there is some inconsistency with this.
Does she like move through the pipes? Is that because, you know, she's in the prefix bathroom?
Yeah, I think she does. Is that how she gets around? I think so. Which, yeah, is weird because she doesn't have to.
Yeah, it's like, why does she choose to move through the pipe?
I don't know.
Also, do you think when a ghost like goes through water, because there's presumably
water. Do they go through
water
or does water go through them?
Well, that's, like, mind-boggling question. But do you think the water gets really icy cold like you do if you
probably
walk through a ghost?
Probably.
I don't know. That's some cool shit.
Is water alive or is it dead? Sorry, that might be a really stupid question.
Water is not alive.
Okay. I guess it doesn't grow.
It's not dead either. It was never alive.
Can you tell I got a C in oceanography?
Oh, God.
So, getting back to her death. So, while she was hiding in the bathroom, Tom Riddle came in and opened the Chamber of Secrets using Parseltongue. Because the Chamber of Secrets entrance was through the bathroom that Myrtle was in. And, side note again, I say that all the time, but have you seen the thing where it's like, so J.K. Rowling came out and said that wizards didn't use plumbing for a really long time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why is a bathroom the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets if there weren't bathrooms at Hogwarts when Salazar Slytherin was there?
I have no idea. Oh, my God. I don't think I ever put that together. Yeah. Seems really wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe he, like, put a curse on it, though. Maybe it was originally just in, like, dungeons or whatever. Maybe he, like, put a curse on it to adapt with the...
Yeah.
Either that or it's a plot hole.
I mean, I don't think it's a huge plot hole. I think there are definitely ways to get around it.
I mean, she just can always just say magic.
Yeah. And I think just, like, changing the room that it's in doesn't change that there's that giant hole in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
You know? And whatever's on... Like, the door is just open when you speak Parseltongue. It doesn't matter, like, what's on top of it. I know in the movies there's snakes on the faucets, and that's kind of, like, the clues. I don't remember if that's how it is in the book.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's been a while since I've listened to Chamber of Secrets or read it, but I don't know. I think that there are definitely ways around it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, though.
Yeah. When Tom Myrtle opened it, he spoke Parsifal tongues. So Myrtle recognizes this voice as a male voice, and this is obviously a girl's bathroom. And so she decides to step out of the stall and confront him about being in the girl's bathroom, how he can't be in here, it's a girl's bathroom. And then as soon as she stepped out of the stall, Riddle commanded the basilisk to attack Myrtle, and she was killed because presumably they made eye contact, her and the basilisk, and so she died instantly.
Okay. Well, Okay, Tom Riddle, I know he's friends with the basilisk, you know, like, they're tight.
They're buds.
They're buds. But how does he avoid any sort of eye contact with the basilisk? Like, does he just walk around with his eyes closed? Because if so, that doesn't seem like it would be the best choice for, like, a person going around attacking people. Or does he, like, stand behind the basilisk? Does he command the basilisk to not look at him? I feel like they would accidentally lock eyes, or they're in a bathroom, like, there are probably some mirrors. It just seems unfeasible.
I think my interpretation, well, through thinking about it more, is that the basilisk probably just has his eyes closed all the time until Tom Riddle commands it to kill somebody. And Tom Riddle's kind of leading it anyways. I see the basilisk as kind of this, like, weapon for him to use, not this living being, because it listens to everything that Tom says. So I think Tom kind of guides it round with its eyes closed.
Do you think that Tom Riddle is riding the basilisk?
Like Daenerys rides her dragons.
Yeah. And also, the other thing about the whole eyes are the ones that kill you is that, maybe I, like, totally missed this in Chamber of Secrets. I don't think I did. I just think it's never said. But, right, it's only Muggleborns that are petrified slash, yes, like, attacked. And
until Ginny.
Right. Okay, yeah. But what, like, does the basilisk choose? Is it just snaking around and then it's like, oh, I smell some Muggleborns over around the corner? How does it, I don't know, how does it know that it's killing Muggleborns and also, or petrifying Muggleborns? And also, if it came across, if Malfoy was just, like, sauntering around, came across the basilisk, would the basilisk be like, oh, pureblood Slytherin, I'm gonna close my eyes?
I think that the basilisk just, like, really doesn't have a mind of its own. I think that it does everything Tom Riddle tells it. And Tom Riddle knows who the Muggleborns are because he knows through Ginny. So he can send it after. Oh, because
Ginny knows
one.
Who's Muggleborn.
I mean, yeah, I think it's pretty common knowledge, like, to know who the purebloods
are. Yeah, I kind of forgot about the Ginny aspect of it. So, yeah. Okay.
Also, what would happen if the basilisk looked itself in the mirror in the bathroom? Looked at itself, made eye contact with itself.
Would it petrify itself?
I don't know.
Gonna go with confidently it would petrify itself.
I feel like that's
so the then most maybe the way to beat the basilisk.
Just carry a mirror everywhere.
Just carry a mirror.
Hermione had the right idea.
Yeah, she just shouldn't have been looking in the mirror herself.
Yeah.
She should have just been walking with the mirror in front of her face, eyes closed.
That's a look.
But I guess the basilisk can still attack you another way.
Yeah. So. It's still a huge-ass snake.
With, like, poisonous venom.
Yeah, that can kill Horcruxes.
Anyway, so, as you were saying, Myrtle is killed. And then what happened after that?
She was killed, and her death was used to create Tom Riddle's first Horcrux, which is the diary, which is interesting because then the diary opens the Chamber of Secrets again and what lets the basilisk out again. So the diary and the basilisk are quite intertwined. And then she's also his first victim.
I have more beef. Okay. Okay, so the basilisk is the one that killed Myrtle. The Myrtle died because she looked the basilisk in the eye. Correct.
Yes.
But then that means that Tom didn't kill Myrtle.
It means that Tom commanded her to die. I mean, okay. I think that I think that we just see the basilisk as two different things. I think you're seeing it as kind of this animal, and I'm seeing it as, like, this weapon that Tom Riddle uses.
Right.
This just vessel that he commands to do what he wants. It's kind of like using a gun to kill somebody. Like, yeah, I didn't kill them, the bullet killed them, but I told the bullet to kill them.
Yeah.
My issue is just that it seems weird to think of it as a weapon because, like, it is a living creature.
Yeah.
But I think, so to explain to the listeners why this is an issue for me, is that, like, if you see the basilisk as a creature kind of with a mind of its own, even if Riddle is the one commanding it, first off, the Myrtle wasn't really Riddle's victim. She was the basilisk's victim. And then on that, I feel like we don't know how you would make a Horcrux, but it seems that you would have to make a you would have to be the person to kill the victim in order to make a Horcrux. Like, you couldn't just find any dead body and make a Horcrux out of it. That seems wrong. I think you have to murder. So it just, like, that's where I take issue. If you think about the basilisk as a creature, as I'm thinking of it, then that's where I take issue with, like, Myrtle being Tom's first kill, and also Tom being able to make a Horcrux from Myrtle. But I guess, I think you're right in that we have to think of the basilisk as, like, a weapon. So it's the same as a gun or a wand, because Tom is commanding this to happen.
Yeah, I think using her as a Horcrux also poses other questions. I mean, obviously we don't know how a Horcrux is made, but there have been some theories out there, and we know that when J.K. told her editor, like, almost threw up, I think, thinking about it. So I've always kind of thought that it has something to do with cannibalism. Mm. And so it's particularly interesting thinking about him using Myrtle, because he's still a student at this point. So, does he already have his grand plan to create Horcruxes? Like, does he already know at this point? Because I feel like for her to, if we're saying that you have to do something with the body, like, you have to use that in some way, then she's found hours later in the bathroom with, and I assume, no signs of injury, because they realized that she was probably killed by a basilisk. Because it's during petrifications and the Chamber of Secrets being opened. So other interesting things.
Do they know that the basilisk is in the Chamber of Secrets? Or do they just think it's a monster? Because it gets pinned on Aragog. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, okay. Hermione was able to figure that out, and, like, Dumbledore and Dippet and all of them weren't. Okay.
Also, why an acromantula doesn't petrify people?
Yeah, so how... Or maybe they thought...
Were there any petrifications the first time, or was it just Myrtle dying?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, I need lots of info on this. I need, like, a short story about the year that the Chamber of Secrets was opened for the first time.
Yeah.
I need to know, like, because how did Tom Riddle spin it that the Acromantula was, Aragog was the one that was killing people?
Yeah, and it wasn't even because wouldn't Aragog have, like,
eaten Myrtle? Don't the Acromantula is, like, they kill people to eat them. Yeah. That's the whole thing when they're, like, gonna kill Harry and Ron. He's like, my children are hungry.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's just so charming.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. There's a lot of, that's a lot of confusion there. And, I mean, it works. What we know works for how things end up playing out in Harry's year. So, like, it's not a big issue with the plot.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting background information that I would love to know.
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
And, okay, he makes a Horcrux out of her. But this, how old, is Voldemort in his fifth year? Because he graduated in 45, right? So this was 43. Or Tom Riddle. And so has he already talked
to Slughorn?
Yeah, I don't know when he talks to Slughorn.
What year was he when that happened?
I feel like that was later. I think he was a prefect. Oh, I guess he can be a prefect at fifth year, right?
Yeah, that's the first year that, or was he a prefect or was he head boy? Because head boy is only seventh year. Prefects are fifth and sixth years.
So I wonder when he was talking to Slughorn and he was asking how many you can make, had he already made
Myrtle. Maybe.
Interesting.
I just want a whole nother 7 books on Tom Riddle's time at Hogwarts. Please and
thank you. That'd be interesting. That'd be really interesting.
From his point of view, yeah. I think that would be really cool.
That'd be, but, like, spooky to read.
Yeah, it would be. Going back to him creating the Horcrux with Myrtle, by Myrtle's death, and how it's weird that the basilisk was the one who killed her. And, like, we kind of talked about how the basilisk is a weapon, but it was so much him that he was able to create a Horcrux. Like, I think that's a different type of kill. And so I was thinking, like, obviously, from what we can surmise, the murder serves to split a part of your soul apart. When you kill somebody, it, like, irreparably destroys your soul. And then from that, you have to get that piece of soul out and put it in something. That's what we don't know. But he was the one who killed her enough to have split his soul, at least. And it's interesting that even at this point, somebody who gets this much pleasure killing, it still affects his soul. Even when he makes his 7th, his 6th Horcrux, that it still splits his soul.
Even though he, like, enjoys killing, it's still splitting his soul. Like, it's still seen as a terrible act, even though he doesn't see it as a terrible act.
Yeah, I think that's interesting to think about.
We gotta do a Horcrux episode.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. This is good. This went really long. We're gonna move right along here. So, getting back to Myrtle. So, after she died, her body, like I said, her body was soon found. So, I believe within hours is kind of what I've always assumed. And her death was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of threatening to shut the school down. So Dippet is ready to do it. And this is what spurs Tom Riddle to be, wait. It was Hagrid, and kind of pulls Hagrid out of nowhere and blames Hagrid and Aragog and uses them to take the ball so that he doesn't have to leave school. So not only is this a terribly unjust act, but it's also just selfish. It's just because school is his favorite place to be. Like, he's the one who caused it, but he doesn't want to leave, so he's going to do whatever he can not to leave Hogwarts. And then, as we know, Myrtle returned as a ghost, and we're going to talk a lot about her decision to become a ghost, either here or a little bit later. So she returns as a ghost to haunt Olive Hornby, who was the girl that was bullying her and led her to go into the bathroom. I assume that Olive bullied her more than just this one time. And she returned to haunt Olive Hornby until her dying day, is what she says. And she was there throughout when she graduated Hogwarts for a good portion of her life.
I don't know where I remember reading this. It might have been on Pottermore, but is Olive the one that found her in the bathroom?
I don't know. Maybe. I feel like she was sent back to find her, maybe.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up.
Because I think she, I think the person who finds her says something like, oh, like, Professor blah, blah, blah sent me to find you.
I found a quote. It says, "Nobody missed me even when I was alive. Took them hours to find my body. I know, I was sitting there waiting for them. Olive Hornby came into the bathroom. Are you in here again sulking, Myrtle?" she said, "because Professor Dippet asked me to look for you. And then she saw my body. Ooh, she didn't forget that until her dying day. I made sure of that." I believe that is from Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, I think that's kind of when Harry starts questioning her about her death.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, there you go.
So we were pretty much spot on. So, like I said, she haunts Olive for a good portion of her life. And then at one point, Olive decided to go to the ministry to try and make Myrtle stop haunting her and trying to get the ministry to make Myrtle leave her alone. So the ministry ordered her to stay at Hogwarts, and then she chose to haunt the bathroom that she was killed in, which I have a question about this. In kind of the real world, let's say the non-Harry Potter world, we think of ghosts as haunting a particular place or a particular object. You know, like these antiques that get passed down. Like, there's this grandfather clocks in my grandparents' house has always been said to be haunted by, like, a Civil War soldier or something. And it, like, follows the grandfather clock around no matter. It haunts the clock. Or, like, that building is haunted. So it's interesting for me to think of Myrtle being made to stop haunting the thing that she decreed that she was going to haunt when she decided to become a ghost.
Yeah.
and was moved to Hogwarts. And I know that, so I don't know, that just confuses me a little bit. I understand that maybe that's not how ghosts work in the wizarding world.
Yeah, because, I mean, she, it seems like before she was able to go wherever she wanted, and she just chose wherever she wanted to be, all wherever Olive Formby was.
Yeah.
And then she gets forced to haunt the bathroom. So she goes, it changes from haunting a person and going kind of wherever to haunting, like, a specific place.
Yeah, and then how did the ministry make her go to Hogwarts? Like, what were they gonna do?
Is there a way to restrain him? Put like a restraining order on her, but
yeah,
maybe she just cooperated because she fears authority because she's still a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, do you think that she, what would happen if a ghost went to Azkaban? Do you think that ghosts are affected by Dementors?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, I have no idea.
Well, because do they have a soul? Because isn't the Dementors thing like,
yeah, they still have a soul, don't they?
I don't know.
Isn't the ghost just the soul? I don't know. We need some info.
Lots of impossible questions in this episode.
Yeah. Also, just a side note is that the, like, idea of her haunting the bathroom, I think JK got that from just the, like, common theme of girls crying in bathrooms that she had, like, experienced as a
teenage youth, girl.
As a girl crying in bathrooms, maybe.
I don't know if I've ever cried in a bathroom.
Not a public bathroom.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking public bathrooms.
Yeah. I don't think I have.
Trying to put myself back in those horrible middle school days.
I know. Okay. So now that we've sufficiently talked about Myrtle's death and lots of other things related to that, we're going to talk a little bit about her relationships with students, particularly the ones that we know of her relationships with, which are Harry and Draco. So starting with Harry, we know that Harry was always nice to Myrtle. I mean, Harry's pretty much nice to everyone, and he's not, like, overly nice or goes out of the way to be nice, but he's just decently nice, and so she develops a crush on him because no one has ever been decently nice to her, and she offers to share her stall with him if he dies. She, like, always is kind of hitting on him a little bit, which is kind of weird. Like, when she helps him solve the clue for the second task in the prefect's bathroom, she, at least in the movie, I think also in the book, she acts, I think they played up in the movie, but also in the book, she acts, like, really sexually towards him. Is, like, talking about how the bubbles were almost gone when Cedric was figuring out, and she's doing her weird giggle and, like, moving towards him. I don't know. It's weird. But also, she helps him solve the mystery of the Chamber of Secrets. And kind of in the books where, after two, she's always upset when Harry hasn't visited for her for a while. So whenever they, like, run into each other, she's always like, oh, don't come visit me in my bathroom anymore. But then she gets over it pretty quickly and is friendly to him because she needs someone to talk to. And then in Cursed Child, Harry asks Myrtle what Albus and Scorpius are up to. And because she does direct Albus and Scorpius to the lake. And Myrtle says, I think it was a secret, but I could never keep anything from you, Harry. How is it you've grown handsomer and handsomer as you've aged? And I think the other people in this scene are like Ginny, Harry, Myrtle, and McGonagall, maybe. Which is just really funny, because I imagine Ginny being like, why is this ghost, this, like, teenage ghost hitting on my husband? And McGonagall just, like, rolling her eyes. I think it's supposed to be one of the funniest scenes in Cursed Child when you see it live. I actually really enjoy the writing in this scene. I think it, Myrtle's, like, she has kind of a superficial part in the whole play, but she's one of the characters where the writing really does sound like Myrtle, what we know of Myrtle. So I think it's funny reading it, and I think it's supposed to be pretty funny when you see it on stage as well. So that's pretty much what we have for Myrtle and Harry.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about Myrtle and Cursed Child when we get to the Where Are They Now section. Spoiler alert, still in the bathroom. So moving on to her relationship with Draco, we really only see this for quite an isolated part of the Half-Blood Prince, and we really only see it from Myrtle's perspective. Somewhat, we kind of I believe we see them, because we see Draco in the bathroom crying and, like, Myrtle comforting him.
Yeah.
Correct? And yeah. then she, is this the same time that Harry attacks him, or is this a different time?
Yeah, I think Harry walks in on them together.
Okay. So, we can surmise that Draco became somewhat close with Myrtle because he really didn't have anybody to confide in, and he didn't have anybody to lean on during this really tough time that he was going through trying to get the Death Eaters into Hogwarts and being tasked with killing Albus Dumbledore, all as a 16-year-old boy whose parents were threatened, or 17, I guess, at this point, while his parents were threatened, and he's basically doing this under duress. It's interesting that Draco confides in her and is friendly to her because, number one, she's a muggle-born. Number two, she's not giving him anything in return besides comfort. Like, he's not gaining much from this relationship. And we see Draco, basically, most of his relationships are for something in return. Like, for Crabbe and Goyle, it's for protection. And I don't know, this is just an anomaly in terms of Draco's relationships that we see throughout the books.
Side note, this episode is coming out on June 4th, and Draco's birthday is June 5th. So happy early birthday, Draco.
Happy early birthday. How old are you? Oh, he'd be like 40, right? Because didn't we say
he was born in 1980, so 39.
That's right, because I think Ron turned 39.
Yeah, in March.
Yeah. Like we were talking about. So I think that his relationship with Myrtle just highlights how desperate he is for companionship. Because whether he knows that she's a muggle-born or not, she's still not, like, the most desirable person to be friends with. And Draco kind of is all about status, you know? She's this annoying ghost that lives in a toilet, you know?
And everyone avoids.
Yeah. This is not the ideal candidate for Draco to become friends with.
Yeah.
But it happens, and I think, like I said, this just highlights how desperate Draco was for somebody to confide in. And I think that this is kind of one of the first signs that we see in Draco changing to become a better man. We see it a little bit more in book 7, and we see it a lot in Cursed Child, how much he's changed. And I think that this is kind of one of those first early signs that he isn't a big fan of Voldemort. He isn't a big fan of working for Voldemort and doing what Voldemort wants. So, in Half-Blood Prince, we can kind of see Myrtle prefer Draco's company to Harry's company because Harry doesn't visit her anymore. And I think that Myrtle's relationship with Harry doesn't normally paint Harry in a very good light because he keeps on promising to, like, go back and visit her and be friends with her, and he always fails on fulfilling these promises, and he still continues to make them even though he won't. And I understand he's kind of in a hard position if somebody's like, oh, come visit me again, you're not just going to be like, no. But Draco does continue to visit her, and they continue to build this relationship and talk. Again, we don't know how much Draco actually likes her as opposed to just using her as kind of this confidant. But anyways, and I mean, she pays him back a little bit. She basically saves Draco's life when Harry attacks him with Sectum Sempra. She's the one who leaves and gets help. And if Snape wasn't the one that was right outside the door, if Snape wasn't the one that she found first, Draco probably would have died. And Snape reminds Harry of that.
Yeah.
That he almost killed Draco and would have if Myrtle didn't leave so quickly and if Snape wasn't the closest one there.
Do you think Harry would have gone to Azkaban?
No.
Dumbledore would have got him out of it.
He's Harry Potter. I think that it would not have been a good thing for him to have killed Draco. I don't know if he would have continued to fight the good fight.
Yeah, it also would have really messed up the whole plan with, like, Draco was supposed to kill Dumbledore, and then how, like, I guess Snape probably still would have stepped in and killed Dumbledore, but then the Elder Wand would have belonged to Snape, and all these things.
Yeah. It would have posed a lot of problems, so. Good thing Harry didn't kill him. Also, Harry, what the heck were you doing trying out a spell that you didn't even know what it did?
Yeah. The Harry makes some questionable choices in 5 and 6.
True. So So the last little bit on Draco is Myrtle makes a joke about liking bad boys.
Katie can relate.
Maybe just a little bit.
All right. So the next section here is that Pottermore does these features, this kind of series called The Unsung Heroes. I don't know if they're still doing it. I think they were doing it for a while. And it's basically just an article where they choose a character that they think is underappreciated from the series, and they just make a list of things of why they're an unsung hero. And a lot of the things actually end up being kind of superficial reasons, but it's interesting to think about the ways that Myrtle, who was dubbed an unsung hero, actually did help Harry and the trio. So the first reason is that the moaning was actually helpful. Because everyone stayed away from the first floor girls' bathroom, the trio could use it to brew Polyjuice potion. And the Pottermore article says, long before the days of the rumor requirement, Harry, Ron, and Hermione had the perfect wet hideout for their plans. But sharing a roommate is never easy, as the trio learned when Myrtle laughed maniacally at Hermione when she accidentally turned her into a cat.
Side note, in the movies, when Hermione takes them to this bathroom, this is the first time that we meet Moaning Myrtle, and Hermione just doesn't warn Harry or Ron that a ghost haunts this bathroom.
Yeah, because the Death Day party isn't in the movies.
Hermione's just like, oh, hello, Myrtle, and Ron and Harry are like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah. Well, this quote, I just thought this, like, little piece from Pottermore I thought was interesting because the rumor requirement is such a big part in basically books 5 through 7, and I always forget that the trio didn't even know it existed until they found it for Dumbledore's army meetings. And then I also made me think about how Myrtle was really mean to Hermione when Hermione turned into a cat, and you would have thought that, like, Myrtle, as someone that got bullied around that age, she may be a bit kinder to, like, another girl who's, like, a little bit of a misfit. Obviously, Hermione has friends, but getting bullied. But she's really harsh at this time to Hermione. And I think this is because Hermione, like, specifically because it was Hermione, and Hermione wasn't very nice to her. But also, it's kind of interesting because, I mean, Hermione in her first year went crying to a bathroom because she got bullied by Ron and almost died in that bathroom from a magical creature, i.e. the troll. So if Harry and Ron hadn't gone to save Hermione, I mean, Hermione helps in killing the troll, but if Harry and Ron hadn't showed up, then maybe Hermione could have ended up like Myrtle. So I think there are some similarities, and maybe it's like when you're similar to someone, you're more critical of them. The next reason is that she was an unlikely agony aunt, and I had no idea what an agony aunt was, but apparently it's another British term that us Americans don't know, and it's basically just the British word for an advice column. So, like, we would say a dear Annie or any other female name. So that's just, an agony aunt is an advice column, and there Pottermore is comparing how Myrtle is kind of like that because even though she was just trying to be nosy and gossipy sometimes, she did care, and she was like kind of an agony aunt to Draco and saved his life, like Katie was saying, by yelling murder in the bathroom and getting Snape. But of course she did end up telling the whole school what Harry did. So she's like good help, but also there's some downfalls. And then also her gossiping could actually be handy. So because she is willing to talk about her own death when Harry and Ron ask her, that ends up saving Ginny's life. She describes it as saying, I just remember seeing a pair of great big yellow eyes, my whole body sort of seized up, and then I was floating away. And then when they asked her, she looked as though she had never been asked such a flattering question when they asked her, how did she die? And this is makes me really sad because I bet in, like, all of those decades... Sorry, that was my dog. I bet in all of those 50 years as a ghost, no one had ever asked questions about herself. And she must be so lonely. And I wonder if she, like, regrets coming back as a ghost, because she made the decision as, like, a 14-year-old, and now she's kind of stuck with no one to talk to for ever. And to watch all these kids grow up and get to leave Hogwarts and go on to a life she didn't get to have.
I think that for all the ghosts that we've really talked about, let's say Moaning Myrtle, the Bloody Baron, and the Grey Lady, they all just seem to have come back for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
The Bloody Baron came back as repentance. Is that the right word? To, like, continually punish himself for something that he did. And, like, that's not helping anybody. And then the Grey Lady came back kind of for the same reason, I think, probably.
It seems like, yeah.
And then
and because Myrtle, she came back, Tom Riddle was able to find the
item. It's very interesting seeing all these instances of unhappy ghosts. No matter, and I mean, nearly Headless Nick kind of fits this too. When he talks to Harry about death and the Order of the Phoenix after Sirius dies, he doesn't flat out say it, but my impression from that is he kind of regrets coming back as a ghost. And I think everybody at some point regrets it. It's just very interesting, ghosts being painted in this light. I think that Myrtle, we kind of alluded to this and maybe said it earlier, is that she basically decides to come back because she's an upset teenager that wants to get back at this teenager that was mean to her.
Yeah.
And I mean,
not much forethought there.
No. I think, I don't know. It's so hard thinking about that because I really can't fault her. I mean, she was a 14-year-old. I wouldn't want to die either. And right. I think this is a way to kind of trick yourself into thinking that you're not actually dead. But I don't think that it was the best decision in the long run.
I don't either. And then the final reason that Pottermore gives for Myrtle being an unsung hero is that her inquiring mind could be valuable. So basically her curiosity, which is the nice way to put it, or her nosiness, which is kind of the more honest way to put it, led to Harry figuring out the golden egg and the clue for the second task of the Triwizard Tournament. And this scene makes me so uncomfortable in the movie. I think I already said that, but yeah, it's but it ends up helping Harry, so maybe more so than Cedric does.
Whoa.
It's a combined effort.
Okay. So moving on to the book-to-movie comparison, we just have kind of a short section on this. So in the movies, Myrtle is portrayed by Shirley Henderson, who was 37 years old at the time of portraying Myrtle. She stands 5'5" tall. Fun fact, she's the oldest actress or actor to play a Hogwarts student in the films. So that's kind of interesting, which is also kind of doesn't really count because Myrtle's not really a student at Hogwarts. She's a ghost, but
she is died. 14 or 15.
It's debatable. Also, if anybody watches the series Death in Paradise, it's on Netflix. It's really good. Just a good classic murder mystery TV show. She actually guest stars in one episode, and I was watching it. I was like, this girl, this annoying high-pitched voice sounds very familiar. Because it's weird because, I mean, she's not a ghost in it, so it's hard to, like, she looks very different in person than she does as Moaning Myrtle, obviously.
Right, when she's, like,
gray. Yeah, so, like, it took me a second, and I don't remember if I looked it up or if I figured it out, but she does. So, for anybody, it's a good show. It's probably one of my favorites. Anyways, and then we kind of talked about this also. We first meet Myrtle in the books at the Death Day Party, but we first meet her in the books at the Death Day Party, but in the movies in the bathroom when Harry, Ron, and Hermione start the brewing of the Polyjuice Potion. And then in the movie Goblet of Fire, Myrtle says to Harry, I've seen some Polyjuice Potion in the drains. It kind of a hint back to how they met kind of joke. Yeah. But it actually can kind of foreshadow that Barty Crouch Jr. is using Polyjuice Potion at this very time to be Mad-Eye Moody. And this doesn't occur in the books because she doesn't show up past Chamber of Secrets. Or this doesn't show up in the movie,
In the Goblet of Fire.
Oh, that's right. She's in the Goblet of Fire, but just the scene in the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the only other... She's just in Chamber of Secrets and Goblet of Fire?
I believe so. because she's not in the Half-Blood Prince in that movie, because we don't know anything about Draco and her relationship through the movies. It's only in the books where that's portrayed.
All right, so finally onto the Where Are They Now section. Myrtle is, of course, mentioned in Cursed Child, like I talked about earlier, and she hasn't moved from the bathrooms of Hogwarts. In one of the timelines, she helps Scorpius and Albus by telling them that the pipes from her bathroom lead into the lake, and that's when they go into the lake and Engorgio charm Cedric to make him lose, humiliate him in the second task, I think.
I think so.
So this takes place in the Roseless timeline, and just a little quote, I think this wraps up our Myrtle episode pretty well. So in this part of Cursed Child, she says to Scorpius and Albus, she says, "It's been a while, boys, in my bathroom, in my girl's bathroom. Well, that's not right. But then again, I always did have a soft spot for Potters, and I was moderately partial to a Malfoy, too. Now, how can I help you, pair?" So I think that kind of brings us full circle with Myrtle.
Jinx.
And, yeah, she really hasn't changed in all those years.
Not at all. Not in all those... How old are they at this point? Like 20.
This happens in like 2020, so it's been 80 years since.
Well,
she
I was thinking from like post 7 on.
Oh.
Because 19 years is their first year.
Yeah, and I think this might happen in like their fifth year or something. Fourth or fifth year, so maybe 25 years later.
24 years, 25 years later.
Yeah.
So, this week's pop quiz is. Would you choose to come back as a ghost if you died at age 14?
Okay. Now, no. As a 21-year-old, no.
Woo-woo!
So mature. But as a 14 or 15-year-old, maybe, and I think I would have ended up regretting it. I think it takes, like, some maturity to choose not to come back. I mean, depending on the circumstances, but yeah, I think I might have come back and I definitely would have regretted it. I don't think I would want to be a ghost.
I think I would probably be on the same page as you. Being that young, the prospect of your life just ending and you not being able to grow up or like see your family again or experience things that 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds experience is just too tempting to a 14-year-old. And you don't really get to do those things when you come back as a ghost, but a ghost is the only way that you can have hope of experiencing those things. Mm-hmm. Even though if there's really not much, there's more than if you choose to not become a ghost.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I definitely agree with you. I would have when I was 14. I don't think I would now. Because it's a more permanent decision than it feels like in the moment for a 14-year-old, I think. And as an age 21-year-old, I think I would be able to see that now.
All right, so that wraps up this episode for our discussion on Moaning Myrtle. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much anywhere, I think. I don't know where people listen to their podcast. And you can download our episodes and listen to them released every Tuesday for the months of June, July, and August. And make sure you leave us a review. We really appreciate them. I think it brightens our day when we see them and get to hear that you guys enjoy listening to us and we're not just shouting into the void.
Yes, you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as Wizard Studies Podcasts. You can now find us on Twitter as Wizard Studies. And then you can also email us with any episode suggestions, pop quiz questions, or like I mentioned earlier, if you're ever wrong and you want to correct us, you can also email us about that too. Our email is wizardstudiespodcasts@gmail.com.
As always, thank you so much for listening, and remember, just do your best, we'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.